On September 20th, which seems like a very long time ago now, Becky and I flew from Key West to Austin, Texas. From there, we drove westward in the great state of Texas. For 9 days, we were back in Becky's home state, which she deeply loves, and a state which I also have loved all my life. There were many Texanic adventures. Did you know Texanic is an adjective? Texanic adventures all along the way, but the culmination of our road trip was to explore the Big Bend, where I first visited as a six-year-old and where Becky had long wanted to visit for the first time. Do you know about the Big Bend? Anyone? Bueller? Anyone? The Big Bend region of far west Texas is an amazingly beautiful and expansive geographic area in the Chihuahuan Desert. In many places, you can see for miles, row upon row of mountains from the multiple ranges that exist there. It is full of wide open spaces, rugged and often harsh landscapes, and at nighttime, amazingly starry skies. Big Bend National Park is only a portion of the Big Bend region, but the park itself comprises 800,000 acres, 1,252 square miles. Just for your calculation, that's larger than the entire state of Rhode Island. This region is also a borderland. The name Big Bend refers to a giant horseshoe-shaped bend in the Rio Grande, the river that marks the border between the U.S. and Mexico. Opposite that portion of Texas, for not quite 200 miles, on the other side lie the Mexican states of Chihuahua and Coahuila. For at least 10,000 years, humans have lived in the Big Bend region. And for some 400 years, people of different ethnic backgrounds and occupations have dwelled together in this in-between region, this borderland. They have shared food and drink and religious practices and music and language and clothing and DNA. Though not an entirely blissful history, for the most part, people living in this region have figured out how to live together and not only to tolerate, but to celebrate and even incorporate their apparent differences. Is this Texas or Mexico? Yes. People and cultures mix in borderlands. It's just what happens. When humans live in proximity to one another, we tend to share and exchange and imitate ways of living. Jesus is in a borderland in today's gospel. Is it Samaria or Galilee? Yes. It's unclear which one, but seems actually to be both, the region in between the regions. One thing is for sure, it's not Judea where Jerusalem is. He's heading that way, and he'll get to Jerusalem for the last time soon enough. But today, he's sort of on his home turf of Galilee and sort of in Samaria. Translated to where we live, we could say, he is not in Miami or Dade County. He's somewhere in Monroe County, in a place that's much more sparsely populated and much less pretentious. A place you don't usually wind up without intending to go there. Luke tells us that in this borderland, Jesus came to a certain village. Doesn't say which one. That's on purpose. It could be any of the villages in that in-between place. In Borderlands, to a certain degree, everyone is both an insider and an outsider, both a resident and a visitor, both native-born and foreigner. Everybody is everything. It's a place of mixing and conflation. But even in Borderlands, there are some folks that most other folks prefer to avoid. A group of these kind of folks, 10 of them, some Jews and some Samaritans, call out to Jesus. Call him by name. Call him by a title and ask for his assistance. Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. These are 10 men, some Jews, some Samaritans, who have leprosy. They approach him, but they keep their distance. They don't come right up to him. They're accustomed to staying back from everyone else. This is probably how they came to hang out together as a religiously and ethnically mixed group. What they had in common was their disease. What they had in common was everyone else did their best to keep clear of them. What's so bad about leprosy? Biblical leprosy is not what we call leprosy today. Another name for modern leprosy is Hansen's disease. Biblical leprosy produced a skin condition that made people with leprosy look like corpses. They looked like death, and nothing defiles like death, especially in a religious system based on ritual purity. Everyone avoided them, and they avoided everyone who didn't have the same disease. Everyone has some sort of ailment sometime. Some ache, some pain, some illness, some wound, some injury. We don't get out of this life without some or all of those. Nearly all of us at nearly any point have some sort of dis-ease, some kind of discomfort about something. The difference for these men with leprosy is that their disease is obvious, observable. They can easily be called out and cast off. Jesus hears them and sees them and heeds their request. Go and show yourselves to the priests, he says. Which priests? The priests of the temple way off in Jerusalem? Or the priests of the temple much closer by on Mount Gerizim in Samaria? We don't know. It doesn't say. What we do know is Jesus says, go to those 10 men, and they go. According to Luke, as they go, they are made clean. As they journey together, they are healed. One of the 10 men sees that he is healed. He turns back praising God. Now the uncleanness of his leprosy taken away, he can safely draw so near to Jesus as to fall down at his very feet. And the Greek says, it is present continuous. He is constantly thanking him. I don't know about you, but I've heard quite a few sermons on this gospel passage that focus on how 9 of 10 people healed just carried on with their lives. Their healed and restored lives, and never even said thank you. But that is not what this text says. Rather, it says, one of the men, one of the 10, realizing that he is healed, turns around, praises God, returns to Jesus, falls at his feet, and keeps on thanking him. Where are the other 9? Perhaps they haven't yet realized they are already healed. Jesus doesn't need to touch these 10 people with leprosy in order to heal them. This story reveals that he is the culmination of the law and the prophets. It all comes together and holds together in Jesus the Christ. Moses, the great lawgiver of Israel, healed his sister Miriam of leprosy without touching her. Elisha, the great prophet of Israel, healed a foreigner, a Syrian general named Naaman, of leprosy without touching him. Moses healed other children of Israel. Elisha even healed foreigners. Jesus heals both. Jesus brings healing to all the people of the borderlands. We often find Jesus crisscrossing borders of various kinds throughout the Gospels. This is particularly the case in Luke's Gospel. We see it in today's reading for sure. It is also prominent in Luke chapter 10. At the beginning of Luke 10, Jesus sends the 70, or 72, depending on which translation you are reading. These are 35, or 36, dynamic duos. No lone rangers. It's a buddy system, and it's all about crossing thresholds and sharing hospitality. It's the earliest commissioning of Jesus' followers by Jesus for a particular work, for spreading good news by spreading out across a territory. His instructions to them are very simple and quite demanding at the same time. Don't take a bunch of equipment. Don't load up on every possible thing you can imagine you might need along the way. Wear sensible clothes for the environment. Travel light. Suss out the rest as you go along. One way to understand the sending of the 70 is as a commission to folks following Jesus who are not part of the inner circle of disciples who will become the apostles. A commissioning of them to show up in the doorways, to appear on the thresholds where they are least likely to be expected. In other words, to place themselves in borderlands, in between places, and see what happens. They are to go in peace, and they are to extend greetings of peace. If they are invited into someone's home, they are to accept the invitation and receive whatever hospitality is offered to them by those whose homes they enter. If they are cussed out for even knocking on the door, they are still to give a greeting of peace and to carry on their way. How these commissioned Jesus followers respond to others is not to be based on how folks respond to them. They are to be about good news and be good news, regardless of the reception they receive. On Wednesday night, some St. Paul's folks and some folks from Cornish Memorial AME Zion and one person from First Congregational UCC showed up at M&M Laundry on the corner of White and Virginia Streets. This was the soft launch of our new collaborative ministry, Loads of Love. We used donated quarters to pay for 52 loads of laundry and 1,160 dryer minutes. We interacted with one another as members of different congregations and with a few dozen patrons of the laundromat that evening. And when we said hello and told folks we were paying for everyone's laundry that night, most of them were surprised, and all of them were grateful. One young woman said, "You have made my night." Only one family declined our offer to pay for their laundry, and that's their prerogative. They also made a donation on their way out to help for next time. A laundromat is a kind of borderland, an in-between space. All sorts of folks wind up there from all kinds of backgrounds and dealing with all manner of circumstances. Especially in the aftermath of a hurricane, people had stuff that needed to be washed and dried, that needed to be cleaned, restored. The next iteration of Loads of Love will be on Wednesday, October 26th from 5 to 9 p.m., again at M&M Laundry. You can support this ministry in three ways. You can pray for it. You can give money to it, especially quarters. And you can volunteer to be among those who offers folks free laundry. It's like happy hour for laundry for anybody and everybody who comes at that particular time. If you're interested in getting involved, please be in touch with Sarah Kindinger, who's behind me in the choir. She's not raising her hand. Or Tammy Hoback. These are the lay people who have proposed and instigated this new and fabulous ministry. We are tasked as Jesus followers with extending greetings of peace and offering and receiving hospitality. We go where the people are, rather than being angry or judgmental about where they are not. Especially in our current moment, following a hurricane, coming out of COVID, we are called to move forward, not backward. There is no going back to what was. And it is not entirely clear what is next. We are living in ongoing days of disruption. Things are not going to smooth out and settle down for good, not anytime soon. Which means we are all in a kind of borderland situation pretty much every moment. Not unlike the border of Galilee and Samaria where we find Jesus today. Not unlike the situation of the Hebrew exiles in the reading from Jeremiah today. Through the prophet Jeremiah, God tells God's people in that strange place far from home to acknowledge their losses. And the word for them is a word for us too. There is no quick fix. We must live where we are. There is hospitality and community, even in the midst of hurt, even in the presence of profound loss. And we are to seek the welfare of the city where we live now, because the welfare and the well-being of that city are our own welfare and well-being. As we keep going, as we journey together, we will be healed and restored together as we make our way. And may God bless us and empower us to live faithfully in this borderland. Amen.